Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to our internet audience. And can I introduce your host for this session? The man who we've heard a couple of times from over the weekend with his real name today, Steve Richardson.
Thanks, John, for that very warm welcome. I'm going to use my real name today because it's a completely different topic that we're doing, so I thought that was probably a good way to go. Don't laugh, it wasn't that funny. This is session 5D, when blindness isn't your only disability. So we're talking today and about the impacts of blindness when they relate to other disabilities and how they affect you in your real world. So just a gentle reminder once again to those in the room that I'm going to try and make this as interactive as I can, but just a general reminder that firstly, when you wish to speak, please wait for the radio microphone so that the people on the internet and radio can also hear you. And also to people using smart devices and other talky things, that you use a headphone and put them on silent, just so that everyone, you know, we can maintain our radio silence. But without further ado, we'll get into the session. Now, I guess the reason behind today's session is that I have felt for a very long time that there has been... I've felt a high level of frustration around the fact that in society, our society, and I think it's a lot of it is to do with the way society runs, there is very little tolerance for people who have more than one disability. We don't do it well. And as I said, this is a systemic problem. And I think a lot of it is probably to do with funding. It affects agencies and government, but it also affects us in our everyday life. For an example might be, you go to an agency, you're a parent of a young blind child, and you are wanting to seek some intervention, and there are many, many wonderful blindness service providers out there who can do that job adequately well. But let's compound the problem now and put that person in a wheelchair, or maybe they also have a hearing impairment. Will those same services be able to deliver as adequately for that person as they will for their blindness? Will they be able to cater for that service? And let's turn it over. If you're a deaf person and you are looking for a service to do with your blindness, is the documentation you receive in accessible format, is that agency able to provide? And as I said, a lot of this is about where they're funded, and it's also tied up with NDIS. When we go and get our NDIS plans, those of us who are in that realm have to focus on one disability. And the reality is, as those on the panel who I will introduce in a moment will tell you, that I am quite with them, I identify as having two disabilities, and they're equal. They have impact on each other, and they do not, in my opinion, one does not take precedence over the other. They both affect the way in which I travel. Particularly in the way in which I travel, but for other people it might be in the way in which they communicate. And I'm fairly short too, so communication's also a problem. And I encountered it the other day when I went to check into the hotel and discovered that the counter was at about my nose level. So very, very tall counter. So this is a little bit about me. I'm Steve Richardson, as you know. I'm from Queensland, and I have a condition called osteoporosis pseudoglioma, which is a joint eye and bone condition. And Jonathan, who is on the panel, Jonathan Craig, who we'll hear from in a minute, will tell you a little more about it because he knows a little more about it. I was only recently diagnosed, but he had a very astute GP who was able to diagnose his early, and he's got much more information than I have. Also joining me from this lovely state, she's a Taswegian, Nicole McKillop.
Hello.
And she is a student at TAFE Tasmania, and she is also has a hearing impairment. And of course, I'm on my left. The other person on this panel is recently appointed royalty. He is no stranger to advocacy. He has, of course, grew up in the Hunter Valley and came to Victoria when he was 20, and has been involved with unions and public relations and all sorts of things, fighting the good fight. He picked a battle with a train, which probably wasn't such a wise thing to do because the train won the first two rounds. Fortunately, though, he's recovered and he's got back into the ring, and he's on, and that's the reason why I've got him here today. And I think we might actually start with him, with none other than Martin Stewart, who is ODB, recently declared ODB, or Order of David Blythe.
I used to be ordered by David Blythe.
And just before we start, I want to try and make this as interactive as I can. So I'm going to ask that we try and keep these a little bit short, so that, because I'd like to get your questions, but I'd also like to get anyone else in this room who may have other disabilities to share their experiences as well. Yeah. So let's proceed. Go ahead, Martin.
Thank you. Yes, systemic concerns were one of my first challenges. And that is because I was told by the funding authority, the TAC, which is a statutory body set up in Victoria for people who have road accidents and, thankfully, train accidents. And they sent the edict out to me straight away. We're only going to look after issues related to your now existing disability because of your accident, and that doesn't include blindness. Fine, I thought. But then I said, yeah, but I've lost my seeing hand. If I pick up a kettle, I don't know where the cup is. So I didn't feel blind until this happened. And that's the truth. I really did regard blindness as a simple little inconvenience. With the addition of losing a vital seeing hand, I'm not going to be negative and say felt lost, because I maybe did at first, but I certainly felt the blindness come to the fore. So I said, you're going to have to assist with the blindness as well, because it's now apparent and relevant. In the end, after probably 18 months of misunderstandings, there has now been put in place written and actual understandings to that degree. So that was the first battle. The other one is, in my case, the addition of support workers, which are a blessing and a curse because it changes your family dynamics. It alters the interactions between your partner and yourself, because there can be jealousies, there can be things that happen that you say, I've got a problem here. There's two women in the house. And that may not seem important to me, but it's certainly important to your partner. And you have to sort out the demarcation lines, the difference between care and support. Believe me, leave the care to your partner and the support to the support worker. But what represents one of those two? Well, your partner will give you strong advice, believe me. So they're the dynamics that you are confronted with. The other one that confronted me straight away was a reference to my leg being referred to as a stump. Oh, yuck. Didn't like it at all. And I still remind the medical profession, who constantly refer to it as a stump, that no, it's my leg. It's just a bit shorter, that's all. there's things that you don't expect. there's a bit of a flip of the coin that happens too. Your blind friends want to know about it. So you know how we complain at times being highlighted for our disabilities and questions come at us? Well, your blind friends want to know. And that's good. I think that's a good thing. More talk, the more education opportunities there are. So blind friends, feel free to ask what it's like to have a prosthetic leg. You can even touch it if you want. It's fine because, you know, it's the sharing of all our experiences, including the additional ones that we now are challenged by, that you at times do want to talk about. Some people are so careful that they just talk about everything but you can feel the questions in the air. Come on, you know, it's fine. Yes, it's different, but taken on positively, it actually can, it does for a start improve your knowledge, so it can improve your life because you experience things that others don't. And you can call it a misfortune, but you know, we've only got a short time on this earth, so make it a fortune. I, in rehab, came across a person who, through a breast cancer operation, lost both arms and legs. And it was very interesting because I was aware that this person was in the gymnasium with me. And I said, look, please, could you get me in touch with this person because I really want to speak to her because she inspires me. Well, the person said to me, well, hang on, she wants to speak to you because you're inspiring her. I said to her when I saw, let's agree here that we're both inspiring each other and it's a good thing. It's a really good thing. As I said last night, the list of people worse off does become a little bit shorter, but the experiences become deeper. And your concern for others, I think, is enhanced by this. You are always looking to assist those who are either in your position or those who could be, or those who have other conditions. So my message that goes out there to all of you is don't be frightened to ask, because we won't be frightened to tell. And you know, it's good because you're wanting to know more about our experience. The systems aren't good at coping with the difference. I'll tell you one short experience that I had, and that is in the gymnasium at the Epworth Rehabilitation Centre. Three times we'd be advised that it was time for lunch. No worries. I was in a chair. Plenty of worries, because guess what? The others went to lunch. I was still sitting in the chair in the gymnasium because people hadn't thought, hang on, he can't see, he hasn't got an electric chair. So I actually had to ring up the call area and say, listen, can you send someone back to assist me to the lunchroom? Three times. So on those simple things and more complex things, there are misunderstanding and ignorance that you must address and educate. I'll speak perhaps a little later. Thank you.
Thanks, Martin. And the experience you talk about being in the chair, that's certainly one that I can relate to, having had some of my time in a chair, and Jonathan could probably relate to that as well. I think we'll go to our resident Taswegian, Nicole. You just have a bit of a... Tell us a little bit about your experience.
Yeah, no worries. Just now started my phone. I would like to politely correct Steve. I do not have a hearing impairment. I actually have Joubert syndrome, which is underdevelopment of the cerebellum in your brain. So, therefore, fine motor skills are a bit challenging. But that's not to say that I didn't try to be quote-unquote normal, even though it was a bit hard. So, yeah, going through school, I got along well with people, but people didn't get along with me. And basically, I was never good at ball sports, but what I was good at is being hit in the head with them. And, yeah, so double whammy with Joubert syndrome and being legally blind at the age of 13. But that's not where the story ends. That's where it starts. I now currently studying my Cert 3 in individual support for people with disabilities at TASTAFE. And I would like to next year start and hopefully finish my Bachelor of Psychology at UTAS. And, yeah, so, yeah, I've had my fair share of struggles, including experiencing anxiety and mental illness throughout my life. Yeah, and that has kind of set me back a little bit, as it's a roller coaster of life, but now you live through those experiences, you get stronger, and then you start advocating for yourself. Yeah, I think that's about all. And something I would like to say is, to me, blindness and, well, not blindness, visually impaired, being visually impaired and having Joubert syndrome is just stuff. Stuff can be good or bad. Stuff is just stuff. It's fluid, dynamic, and never stays the same. It's not good or not bad. It just is. So yeah, stuff is just stuff, and I am a human with or without my stuff. Thank you.
Thanks. Thanks, Nicole, and my apologies for the incorrect introduction. But I am
no
pleased
worries.
To say that I actually am very pleased to say that I was looking for someone in. Who had your unique set of circumstances for the diversity of this panel. So
sure.
It all turned out well. My third guest is a man whose diagnosis I'm sure I will get correct, because he and I have had many discussions about it in the last few weeks. And he's known to most of you, if not all of you, for his wonderful work on the editing of BC News. And he's been a Brisbane person until fairly recently, and then he made the move to the south, to Melbourne. So I'll introduce him now, Jonathan Craig.
Thank you. So as Steve mentioned, I also have OPPG, as I'll refer to it. Steve and I have had some similar experiences, really, and he will actually tell his story in the next issue of BC News. And it's a really interesting story of how important, actually, diagnosis is in some circumstances. Now, I was diagnosed very young, and so I always knew why, I had to be more careful and was perhaps more fragile than other people. My childhood was punctuated by various broken bones, Most people who are blind, you know, falling over is something that perhaps happens, you know, occasionally. But for someone like myself and for someone like Steve, it has to be somewhat more occasional because it can honestly be catastrophic. I'm interested in the way that physiology affects psychology. I think that my experience has instilled a great deal of caution in me. I'm very envious, of course, of all of you brave explorers who are boldly going out into the community. My circumstances have rendered me less able to access things like public transport, which I would really like to a lot more. And I think that there are a lot of opportunities for technology and other developments to enable that now. I have also experienced somewhat being shuffled between service providers and so on, but I won't dwell on that. What I will say is that I think that the NDIS, for me, is a real success story because it has, for the first time, enabled service provision that was uniquely tailored to my actual needs and an interdisciplinary approach as well. Before we go on, I'd just like to raise very bluntly a question that's kind of between the lines of this session, I think. If blindness is your only impairment, why should you care about people with multiple disabilities? Now, that sounds... I'm not moralising here, because I think that the answer is actually kind of pragmatic. I think that the reason that we should all be thinking about this is the same reason why sighted people also want to be our allies. And that is because these questions that are raised and the conversations that are started by talking about multiple disabilities are conversations that we are all having as a society about identity, about individuality, about what it's like to be part of a minority group. And I think that there are lessons that the blind community at large can learn from people with multiple disabilities, as well as lessons that service providers can learn, just in the same way that there are lessons that the blind community, that the sighted community can learn from the blind community. So that's my answer to that particular question. And let us go on now to some discussion, but thank you for indulging me.
Thanks, Jonathan. And you raise some very good points. I think the big point that you've raised there is why should others care? You know, why should they care? And I think it is a very important consideration because we do get, you know, I think we get locked into our own position in life, and often it's just these things are overlooked. I think I probably those at the workshop on Friday. I'm not sure some of you may have been in the room when Ricky and I conducted a workshop on independence, and we touched on this issue as well from a travel point of view. And I touched on the fact that for myself, travel, I do as well as I can to get public transport, but there are just some options that I don't take. I know that going to work, I get the train to the next station because I don't want to deal with the slip lanes because it's just one more hazard that I don't feel like dealing with. I have trouble with large roads because I have trouble walking across them quickly enough. So those sorts of things are all, they're important. They may not be important to someone else, but they certainly are to me. And I guess it's our message is to, basically consider that sometimes those around you may be struggling with things that are going on. But I won't say any more now. I will throw the room open to discussion and questions. This is what we're all here for. We all sit here at conventions for session after session, and so I want to give this room a chance to have a bit of a voice too.
Can I just add, just before that happens, on the care part, and that is, it's amazing. For example, when we go into train travel and there's announcements, there's no doubt about that, that it helps all, not just us. When it comes to one-handed design, same thing. I find a lot of equipment that is designed particularly for people with one hand is very helpful for all.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Thanks, Ma. You actually, we have a unique set of experiences here, and that's certainly one that that probably a lot of us don't. It's interesting how even those of us with multi-disabilities, I have my own set of issues, but I don't necessarily always think of others with different issues. Mm-hmm. So that is why I think this illustrates the point, why should we care? Because we could all learn something. We might all need to know this stuff one day. Okay, so, sorry, the room now. Anyone with questions? And once again, a reminder to wait for the mic.
Yeah, it's Lynn Davis from Lynn Davis. New South Wales, and I have the mic.
Good start.
Jonathan, your question.
Yes.
For people whose only disability is blindness, why should they care? I've been sitting here sort of thinking about the answer to that question before you asked it. I'm what's euphemistically referred to as in the autumn of my life, and I'm discovering that the ageing process actually has much in common with many of the things that you guys have just been talking about.
Yes.
And I think that's one reason why people for whom blindness is their only disability might care, because age is something which is going to happen to most of us, mercifully, most of us.
All of us, hopefully.
Yeah, well, hopefully all of us.
Hopefully all, yeah.
Yeah. But that's one reason why I think we should care. The other thing that occurred to me, though, as you were talking, was that we know that blindness and vision impairment have a very close relationship with ageing. Mm. So there are more of us in older age groups.
Yes.
And so I think it's probably very common for people who have a severe vision impairment to also experience many of the other things that other people may not think of as another disability, but in fact have many of the characteristics that you're talking about. So, we might use that relationship to build on, if you like, the strength of this voice through numbers. I think that's important for advocacy. But also to recognise that the reason why we might care about these things is because it probably many of them lay in store for most of us.
Yes, those are really great points, Lynn. And I should say that, the effect, the way that Steve's and my osteoporosis looks now is very similar to the way that osteoporosis may develop over as someone ages. The mechanism is just different. So yes, age is something that, as you say, will happen to most of us, and it will have various impacts. And yes, I do think that the, intersectionality is more common than many of us would acknowledge.
Thanks, Lynn. Others?
Janine Sardou.
Yep.
I'm sitting next to Lynn, and she asked some of the points that I was going to ask more eloquently. But I'd just like to thank the three of you. Four of you. Everyone who's spoken, I really have enjoyed the presentations, and thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Janine.
Thanks, Janine. Others? Yeah, well, Emma, you can wait for the microphone, please, before you... Oh, you should know that by now. No. I'm in the chair here. Thank you. It's the first time I've been able to say that to her. You'll have to go to the
headmaster. Thank you for your presentation. It's Ross DeVent here.
Yep.
It's really resonated with me, this discussion with my paralysis on my right side of my body. I had a stroke when I was 5 years old, which resulted with that, and my blindness as well. And I just wanted to relate a little story about the fact, the reason why I decided to get a dog, a guide dog over a cane. It was because I was finding that my hand was getting sore from using my cane so much. So using my dog is, while it's more work, it's actually gives me a greater sense of independence because my hand doesn't get as sore by the end of the day. And also, I just wanted to also talk about something called the maker philosophy, which I've just learned about in the last few months, which is when you have a problem that needs solving specifically for your own needs. And you're talking about a lot of devices aren't made for multiple disabilities. I always found braille devices, while they had one-handed modes, was which I can use, which means you press the keys together and you then you press spacebar after you've done the character, and then it puts the dots on, it registers those dots. Mm-hmm. So the maker philosophy is something that looks at the problem and then looks at that and looks at ways of fixing it. Mm-hmm. So I've actually teamed up with a researcher, Kirsten Ellis from Monash University, to design a one-handed keyboard, a braille keyboard. Mm. So we're combining different dots into one dot. So we've taken dots 5 and 6, and I know I've talked to you, Martin, about this. So I've taken dots 5 and 6 on the braille keyboard and put that into one dot, one key, so I can actually press that, the dots 5 and 6, in one key. So it's something that we've been looking at, and I'm starting to share with other people with who've got one hand at its work as well.
Thanks, Ross.
Can I keep talking? Sorry.
Just for another
30 seconds?
Yep,
okay.
Yep, 30 seconds, good.
Something that I'd also like to talk about is I've been thinking lately about other people with other disabilities, like intellectual disabilities as well, and I think we really need to look at that as well.
Yes.
I've been involved in a program called the Sexual Lives and Respectful Relationships for people with intellectual disabilities, and it's, I would really like to talk to them about including blind people in that.
Okay, yep, good. And you've touched on some, I think, once again, very valid points. And I was at the Braille Music Workshop on Friday, and you were manipulating the program with using that facility with one-hand mode. I noticed that a lot of the Braille displays have it, and that's a really good thing. And I think the other thing that I'll just say at this stage is that Ross... demonstrates that certainly no one expects to have a stroke at 5, but certainly as you age, this is one of the things that can be a potential problem too. So in your own way, you're experiencing similar things to the likes of what Jonathan and I do with bone condition.
Yeah, and I'm glad you brought in the maker philosophy, Ross, because particularly interesting. That's something that, everybody has unique needs, whether or not they're created by disability. And so having something, knowing about something like that and having it in your toolkit is useful regardless as well.
If I can talk about misdesign, there's always the other side of the coin here. And by the way, thanks, Ross, for inviting me into that process for the development of this one-handed braille keyboard. I'm sure many, including those that have two hands, would look forward to using that. And that is, I recently had an operation that was called the TMR operation, targeted muscle reinnervation, to get me out of a chair walking again. And anyway, they said to me, oh, look, would you like to go to rehab after that? And I said, oh, no, I think I'd prefer to be at home. And they said, well, there's a 6 weeks program that we'd like you to enter. I said, great, no problems, I'll do that. What does it involve? Oh, it involves hand-eye coordination. I said, I think I can do the hand part, the eye is a problem.
Enough said.
The person who was speaking to me said, oh, yes, of course. Yes, it was involving watching on the screen as the pulses, because you do get a lot of added electrical activity, which is very, very painful, may I say, but I've got through it now. And it involves watching those pulses and responding in the opposite direction. Mm. Well, not for me.
Thanks, Martin. But God, I'm just trying to rack my brain. Are we finishing at 35 or 45? Okay, cool. So we've got around about 15 minutes left. Of course, absolutely. Yep, who's next?
Yes, my name is Paul Mogambi. Thank you very much for the presenters. I would like to make some following comment and also get some response from the good presenters. It's an observation that this honest debate about blind persons having multiple impairments, it's a big issue, but we don't really talk about it. You find more so we concentrate so much on issues of being blind, and we find ourselves not talking about other issues, maybe like mental health, hearing impairment, and you find these are gap. And then you might find that many of the services we receive, they're not really unified in terms of to meet people's needs. And more in case coming from Africa, there are some things we don't discuss in public about maybe having another disability on top, since even the existing one is not even allowed to be talked about. So it's a great lesson to hear people talking about their experiences and how they have lived with their disability. So I believe it's something which we really need to continue having this discussion, so that at the end of the day we create that change which is needed, and people become more aware. This issue really, it's all about even the way we are being portrayed, or how sometimes also ableism comes in when sometimes in different forums, you find that persons even who don't have disability, they can be they become actors in some movies, and then they display in us in a negative way, and this one also contributes maybe for many of us not coming out. And for those who are coming out, maybe the community has what they call lateral violence against them, such that people complain too much about those who are coming out. So it's something I would like to hear the views of the presenters. Mm-hmm. How do they handle such? Thank you.
Yep. Okay. Thank you very much. Would anyone like to take up that challenge?
I'll just take a couple of points, if that's okay. Firstly, Paul, I'm really glad that you brought up things like mental health, because I think it's important to acknowledge what you might call invisible disabilities, yes, as being a big part of the multi-disability continuum. And I also am glad that you brought up from a particular angle the idea of, dealing with disability from the perspective of other cultures. Now, I think that it's just a general important as part of bringing in the concept of intersectionality into this, disability, culture, economic background, all of these are part of, what gets us into the positions we are now in life. And I think understanding the complexity of those factors will be really, if we can talk about it in that way, I think that can be really valuable in understanding the diversity of living with disability, let's say. I'll let others comment on other aspects of the things you said, because there were so many. Thank you, Paul.
If I can comment on the experience of acquiring a disability and having blindness, and how acquiring that new disability gives you a different experience compared to those who already have that same disability. Let me explain. The act of transferring is very interesting when you're totally blind. So what I mean by that is when you're in a chair and you have to transfer to another area, say for example a car seat. So you touch the car seat, measure the distance, no problems. I found at first it was honestly like free falling from a parachute. You really felt, oh, I'm in the air. Gee, this seems like a fair way to go. And you hope that you've measured it properly. Because once you've started, there's not much chance of getting back. And that was an amazing experience at first. But as time goes by, your body adapts. Just be patient with your body and it soon gets there. Same with walking with an artificial leg. That microsecond makes a major difference. That microsecond longer that the messages take to get to your brain when you're stepping in a prosthetic leg. But your body adjusts and soon you're pretty well walking as normal.
Yep, very good. Very good point. Nicole, you've been very quiet. Did you have anything to add to this discussion?
Yeah, I do.
Go ahead.
I'm thinking about the social model of disability and how it is a very negative one. I think, let me remember, the last institution for people with disabilities probably closed. Don't take my word for it, I'm probably getting this number out of the air, but about 30, 40 years ago. And our social model was people with disabilities is they're there, they're not supposed to be seen or heard. But now it's we're included, but still segregated. And it's still kind of
that we, you know, marginalised, let's say, yeah. And I mean the institutional model that I think you're referring to has had a real impact on the fact that, you know, people are often not aware of our actual abilities in real life. So that I think is a real problem that we're now having today as a result of that older model, which is now happily, you know, passed us by. But yeah,
thanks, Nicole. I think your own condition, I think, is what, you know, it's a good example here of, you know, we you know, sometimes you obviously have difficulty with conveying exactly what it is that you're trying to get, but I mean, I think it's, you've made a very, very good point, and I think that it's an important one. Any other?
Am I allowed
yes.
to?
Yes.
Hang on.
If you're
can
in
I,
turn, yes,
I'll
you
be
are.
Very quick. I promise. Right. Sorry. Yes, I'm Emma.
Yes,
Benham. I'm Hobart. And what I wanted to say. Well, I wanted to ask a question, but I also wanted to just make a quick comment, and that is to say that I've been really open about my mental health issues over recent years, and I've done that quite deliberately, not because I want people's sympathy, but because I want to make it clear that this is something that people experience, and that BCA is ready to have those conversations, and I'll continue to do so. But I just really identified with your comment, Martin, where you said that, you know, something to the effect that, you know, you really felt blind. You really felt your blindness after acquiring other impairments. And I felt that too, because my mental health deteriorated fairly late in life. And I really didn't struggle too much, I didn't think, with blindness up until that point.
But the
interesting thing is that society, because they can see blindness, they assume that's got to be the more difficult issue. It really wasn't for me. And I'm not saying that's the case for everybody, but that's just my experience. But the other thing I wanted to say in answer to your question, Jonathan, about why would people care, is that our community is incredibly judgmental. I'm sorry, I'm just going to call it out. We are one of the most judgmental communities I have ever been a part of, and I think we need to stop.
Yeah.
And I think when we are calling people out on Facebook or on email lists or whatever, we need to stop and think about the fact that just because we might, you know, find a certain task really easy and straightforward, that does not mean that that is the case for everybody. And so that leads on, sorry, it's a bit longer than I was hoping, but that leads on to my question, which is, what do you guys think that BCA needs to be doing about this, about not just about multiple disability, but about managing and dealing with the judgmental nature of our community at times?
Well, I have a few comments, but I'll let others answer, and then I'll finish with them.
Emma, firstly, I'm interested in the description of late in life for someone so young.
She's younger than me.
Well, what you've just done is a great start.
Yeah.
It's got to be called out for what it is, judgmentalness.
Yeah, absolutely.
At the same time, we must protect freedom of speech,
yes,
but have some caveats to that, and that's respect, let that flourish. Yeah, so when it happens, call it out. I think the leadership, the moderators of our list, for example, should watch out for it and counsel the person who has made the comment, but give them a chance to continue speaking, but in a more respectful manner. Because I'm very, very disappointed at times when people get taken off lists for comments. At the same time, I'm well aware that their comments shouldn't have been made. So we've got to be careful. There's got to be a balance. But the leadership is the most important component of this. If they stay silent, it's gazetted. It shouldn't be. It should be called out.
Yeah.
Okay. Others?
Can I just... Can I just add something? I appreciate that. Emma, I would say I was pretty independent and I found myself as a person. But, yeah, previously with mental health coming to the foreground, it's kind of like I need to start again. Stories can be very powerful. And I've just started telling stories. And that's where awareness comes from. But in telling stories, you need to, be met with privacy, confidentiality, and being comfortable and having it received positively, not negatively, because... as you all know, some of you have spoken out, I've spoken out, it hasn't gone as well as I thought, so I just like, okay, I won't talk next time, so it needs to be met with that acknowledgement, yeah.
Okay, so just, we've sort of slightly running out of time. Jonathan?
I just want to make one comment.
Yep.
And I'll be very, very quick. It's Belinda Wilson here.
Yep.
The reason why you should care is because it's already happening.
Yeah.
It's whether people acknowledge or not. I actually just did a recruitment program for youth, 15 to 24, and the amount of them that have multiple disabilities or conditions is more than the amount that just have vision impairment. So when you look at any chronic illness, it's going to be linked to depression and anxiety. When you look at some illnesses that cause vision impairment, like diabetes, or can be affected by vision impairment, like diabetes, the reason why you should care about multiple disabilities and conditions is because whether or not someone is willing to admit it, the majority of people do have multiple disabilities or conditions.
Yes. Yes.
Thanks,
Belinda.
Thanks, Belinda. Just
nothing. Yeah, well done.
Yeah. Yeah, well done. So we're just a bit out of time. I just wanted to let's do something you burningly wanted to add, Jonathan.
No, that's all right. We'll fit him in.
Okay. I just want to let.
Folks, please stay in your seats. There are important things to say.
I just want to let you know. Basically, I just wanted to say, as far as what BCA is doing with regard to this with regard to the fallout from this session. I'm working with Crystal Malcolm at the moment. We had a discussion about basically setting up some stuff going forward, and we're looking at this stage maybe setting up an email group, an information sharing group.
Mm-hmm.
I've already expressed to her that I'm also willing to facilitate peer support groups for people with multiple disability. And also just, it even can be just things like, I've broken my arm, my left arm is in plaster, how am I going to deal with my dog? It might also be not permanent things, like just things that people have to cope with now as emergencies. These are the sorts of things I want to set up and facilitate sharing. So that's all I really wanted to say. And I want to thank my fellow panellists today, Nicole McKillop.
Thank you.
I want to also thank Martin Stewart.
Thank you.
And also Jonathan Craig.
Thanks.
For their time. And and also for sharing their personal stories. We sometimes struggle with that. It's not an easy thing to do to do that. And for all of you in the room, it's very gutsy to come up and share your stories experiences. So I thank all of you for that.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, just take the time if you need to if anything's bothered you today about what we've said or what's happened, to have a quiet moment and reflect on that and deal with it in your own way.
Yeah.
With that, I conclude and close session 5D and hand back to John Simpson.
Thanks for coming, everyone.
Thank you.
Thanks, folks.